Today on Wings, more from the outstanding feminist, lesbian, transgender, working-class orator Leslie Feinberg, who died November 14th, 2014.
I don't say this to tear down the women's movement, but to make it stronger today.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Leslie Feinberg is best known for the novel Stone Butch Blues and the nonfiction book Transgender Warriors. In 2006, after several years of debilitating illness, Feinberg addressed the Women's Studies Department of Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, Canada, to promote a new novel, Drag King Dreams, and a vision of a broadly unified radical movement. Part one of the talk, heard on Wings last week, ended with a description of the 1969 Stonewall riots in New York.
It was no accident that Stonewall exploded from those who were the most oppressed. Those from below were nose to nose with the state, and just to get a job, just to get an apartment, just to use the toilet in public, just to walk down the street was a battle. And where did the youth get inspired that night? The battles that were going on all over the city, all over the country. Black power, the American Indian movement, the organizing of the Chicano farm workers in the fields, the Young Lords, Puerto Rican revolutionary youth, the militant Asian youth, students, the anti-Vietnam War movement, and women's liberation. That night, the youth were so ferocious that the police actually retreated back in the Stonewall Bar and barricaded themselves inside, and someone had the foresight to cut the electric and power lines and phone lines so they were in there in the dark without backup. And this crowd, these were people whose bodies still bore the wounds from their arrests, who knew their oppressors by name and by face, and they rocked a parking meter and uprooted it from a concrete sidewalk to use as a battering ram to get in that bar at those police. They used lighter fluid and tried to burn the damn bar down.
Hell yeah.
There were struggles going on in that city for open admissions at the school. Columbia University had displaced people of Harlem, set up an apartheid fence around the school to keep it all lily white. And the students carried out an armed occupation. Students of many nationalities took over the campus and opened it up and called it Harlem U and said, everybody's coming to school for free now. Now the schools in the U.S. are being resegregated. But those were the struggles that won women's studies, that won Black and Chicano studies, that won Native studies. Those weren't gifts from the university administration. They were hard won from the movement from below. When women's liberation began to really take off, people like myself were not welcomed by many in the women's movement. And again, I don't say this to tear down the women's movement, but to make it stronger today. Movements are like the individuals who make up movements. We make mistakes. We only know what we know. When it's not conscious, it's still unconscious. There are a lot of currents in a movement. It's like a white-capped river. And which current is in the ascendancy, which current has the power and the forward thrust, will determine the politics of that movement. I want to raise one lesson that I think is applicable today. And that was not anything that those in the women's movement at the time did to be cruel or vicious or anything else. It was just the opposite. It was an important social experiment. Because women's liberation for the first time was, first of all, creating the word woman with pride. I mean, all the words that I grew up with for those of us who were female, were not words that we would want to use about ourselves. But it also was a movement that showed the different socialization of those who were born female and male. And that was an important contribution because people did not even admit that women were oppressed. It's like, oh, honey, why? Because some guy opens a door for you, big deal. There was a ridiculing of the institutionalization of oppression and the way the economy profited from it and the way it pitted people against each other. But the solution that many tried, and it was a significant social experiment to try, was to see, could humankind, not just women, but humankind be liberated by suppressing or doing away with femininity and masculinity and creating a kind of androgyny that would liberate people from the poisonous concepts that were so imbued in these gender expressions. Now, first of all, those of us who were butch were considered to be part of the patriarchy. And those who loved us were considered to have no consciousness and be sleeping with the enemy. It was a vulgarization, but again, like I said, what we don't know, we don't know. And what is not conscious yet is still unconscious. And you know, androgyny is very liberating if you are androgynous. But if those of us who had been gang raped and beaten and institutionalized and humiliated and hounded and harassed and could not find a job and could not get medical care and were not safe walking down the street did not change our gender expression, why would we? Because people in the movement said the way we were wasn't right. We wanted a movement that didn't just tolerate us but needed us. And the movement did need us. And that's an important thing to remember. I believe that there are two very important tasks that still need to be done from that experiment. And one is to defend everybody's right to freedom of gender expression without criticism, without judgment, because it is not my tie that is oppressing you. It is not your wingtip rogues or your lipstick that is oppressing me. Part of the gift of second wave women's liberation to the consciousness of all was the understanding that this was an institutionalized mechanism of oppression in the economy and the society as a whole. And everyone is needed to fight that. And everyone has to feel that this is our movement and we're bringing something to it that is unique and precious. And the second task, and this is the other wing of this bird, is a thoroughgoing analysis of the attitudes that have been imbued in these gender expressions and getting rid of every damn one of them. This concept that masculinity is everything positive and femininity, therefore, is everything negative has to be done away with, including in our own movements. You know, part of the reason I wrote Stone Butch Blues was when I heard young women say, oh, you know, oh, she's so late, she's my femme. Well, you know how femmes are. I don't want to hear it.
Thank you.
You know, we shoot ourselves in the foot. If you want to defend femininity, or masculinity, let's say, as being the ability to create bookshelves that don't wobble and use power tools and change the oil on the car, well, then I am high femme. Anti-femme attitudes towards women and men are poison. They are a distillation of misogyny. It's an enemy way of thinking for us all. And I, although I will claim being a masculine female for as long as it is an outlaw status, also don't want to essentialize for myself the concepts of masculinity and femininity. You know, imagine only having two words to describe all of us. You know, which are you? Which are you, feminine or masculine? I mean, it's to me as though you took all of meteorological science and reduced it all to hot and cold. And who the hell would turn on television to see what the weather was going to be if they said it's going to be cold and cold and cold and cold and then it's going to be hot? How would you dress? I think of our gender expression as what each of us fashion from the social bolt of cloth that we are issued, the individual symphony from notes that we each make on a socially recognized tonal scale. And the reason I think this is so important to raise today is because I hear the argument that being genderqueer is more revolutionary than to be a trans man or a trans woman. And you know what? Every time I hear somebody say that transsexual men and women are upholding the binary, I look at them and it's somebody who's male or female identified. And I think, don't drag us genderqueers into your transsexual bashing. The fact is, it is an ahistorical approach to say that transsexual men and women are simply adapting to the rigid social roles for men and women today. And, you know, if we could just have a society where there was more equality and more flexibility with gender roles, people wouldn't have to go to such extremes. And I think, wow, now there's some solidarity. I want to build a world so equitable that people like you won't exist. One of the things I did with transgender warriors was to go back thousands of years and find every continent written evidence and people's sacred stories and what the dominant Western attitude today would refer to as sex and gender and sexuality, expressed differently in different historical periods and regions and nationalities and classes. The fact is that there's always been wide diversity in the human population. Gay American Indians in the U.S. published a book called Living the Spirit, and in the back of this book, they found the language and the words from 130 Native nations on the North American continent that had what they referred to as alternative sex/gender roles. These were pre-class societies that the armies of colonialism and imperialism go in and carry out a cultural genocide, a historical genocide, and are then free to say, and the way it is now is the way it has always been. So I come back to where I began, that I believe that the importance is so great to us, not only in the women's liberation movement, but in the movements for liberation, to deepen our understanding of the connections between racism and national oppression and the marginalization of people based on lack of accessibility and sex and gender expression and sexuality. And our movement today, no matter where we are, is taking place in the context of this U.S.-led war for empire. We need to be able to build diverse and powerful coalitions. But I believe they need to be united fronts, meaning that we can unite across many differences on a principled agreement, but it doesn't mean that unity means we have to leave all of who we are at the door. We don't need a movement that tolerates difference. We need a movement that is enriched by it, that does not say unity means that all women face the same oppression. That is not a contribution for unity and solidarity. We need to be able to appreciate the fact that all women don't share the same experience. And therefore, let's understand not only our difference, the different oppressions, because that's what the Stonewall Rebellion was. It was people who did not face a common oppression, who did not have the same experiences or degrees of oppression based on their leaving home in the morning, if they had a home to leave, but who made history when they united shoulder to shoulder against a common enemy. I want to bring the struggle of women to every movement, and I want to bring every struggle to women's liberation. I have heard the argument from some leftists in the U.S. that, well, you know, you can't really end the oppression of women under capitalism. I think, thank you. I knew that. But here's my question to you. How do you think you will build unity in the class struggle if you don't fight oppression? As Frederick Douglass said, trying to be the best fighters against each other's oppression as the glue for that coalition. Now, when it comes to war, and I hear Laura Bush get on the radio and use the words women's liberation, it's time to sweat. It's time to get together and talk. But that's exactly what happened before the U.S. invaded Afghanistan. The U.S. used the 9/11 crisis, but it was a pretext. Because, in fact, in the summer, they had already broken with the Taliban because the Unocal pipeline coming from Central Asia through Afghanistan wasn't going the way with negotiations that they wanted it done. So all of a sudden, they said, the Taliban is not kind to women. Well, they ought to know that. Washington helped put them into power. In fact, there were some leading white second wave feminists who signed open public letters calling for the U.S. to invade Afghanistan and liberate the women there. Well, where were they? Where were they when the Afghan people were making a revolution against feudalism? And the U.S. was arming the same forces that today it's referring to as terrorists in order to drown that revolution in blood, a revolution that abolished the bride price, that liberated women from feudalism in which women did not have names, that found leadership positions for women in education and jobs. Where was the women's movement when this revolution could have pushed things forward? It was hands off, because when the U.S. began arming the feudal landlords and their troops to go in and drown this revolution in blood, as in counter-revolutionary blood, the Afghan government called upon the Soviet Union to help defend them. And the U.S. said, well, the Soviet Union came in first, so now we got to go in. And the movement said, okay. Women's liberation and Afghanistan, women's liberation and Iraq, these are things that we have to be able to learn as lessons, because whenever a war is being planned or executed, they never say, come join our armies, go fight and die in order to enslave people around the world. Let's turn the clock back on history. Give your life, kill or be killed for big oil and Unocal and the banks and Halliburton. Instead, it's always as though the Pentagon and all the armies it drags in its tow are the great forces of liberation. Just a Meals on Wheels. A humanitarian effort. Today in the U.S., there's a domestic war going on as well. And those who saw the aftermath of Katrina know that this was a shooting war. It was a shooting war, a racist war, which has created yet another diaspora in the Deep South of African Americans, and also of undocumented Latino workers whose names are just not there. Now, when they talk about rebuilding this city, they're talking about rebuilding it for rich whites, not for the people who live there. Today, in the U.S. universities, more than 50% of some classes are being taught by people who have no benefits. Many people are working temp jobs, two or three, no health care. Every social and economic issue that we face in the U.S. today is tied to this war. Women's rights? Who will we turn to? The Pentagon, where we've just learned that there's been a systematic hiding of the fact that women GIs at night in 120-degree heat were not drinking water, died of dehydration because they feared being raped, going to the latrines, and the Pentagon higher-ups have covered this up. Money for breast cancer research, money for AIDS treatment, youth, jobs. Youth are being told, we've got a job for you. You just sign here. You can start right away. Social services, daycare, all of it's tied to the war. And lesbian, gay, bi rights, trans rights, the military, the biggest employer in the U.S., this public employer, you know, this equal opportunity employer, right? Don't ask, don't tell. They're carrying out a war of terror against their own ranks as well, in which soldiers are taught to bayonet the enemy using anti-gay epithets, anti-trans epithets, anti-woman slurs. And you know, during the first Gulf War, the generals and admirals lifted the don't ask, don't tell. It was okay to be a lesbian, gay, bi, or trans GI until the invasion was over, and then they were all summarily discharged without any benefits. Those who are going over there and dying, we're being told in the U.S., you have to support them now. You have to support their mission. We say, no, that's your mission. The only people who support the troops are the ones of us who are saying, bring them home now. And we support the Iraqi right to resist being occupied and bombed and their infrastructure being dismantled and their resources being stolen. It is the resistance of the Iraqi people that is keeping all that wealth from being sucked out and is fighting against this huge, mega powerful army and cannot be broken by the shock and awe. And speaking of shock and awe, I want to stand in solidarity tonight, shoulder to shoulder with my Muslim sisters and brothers against this attack on Islam. This is not just a cartoon. That's a degrading of the issue of what this is really about. The so-called war on terror, the occupation of Afghanistan and Iraq, the menacing of Iran and Syria, the use of sex and gender humiliation and rape against prisoners in Abu Ghraib, the military interrogators reportedly flushing the Quran down the toilet in front of Muslim prisoners, the roundup of Arab and Muslim and South Asian people in the U.S., the mass disappearings. I stand with Muslim people from the Middle East to Asia to Africa to North America to say this is part of the racist salvos, the racist propaganda to try to justify the war on terror. And we need to have unity with Muslim people to stop this from dividing our movements. As we work towards coalition, I also hope that we can revitalize the left wing of women's liberation. We need to revive red feminism. Internationally known feminist theorist Chandra Talpati Mohanty, 2 decades ago, wrote a classic essay entitled Under Western Eyes, in which she challenged Western feminism to deepen its analysis of anti-colonialism, of anti-imperialism. And when she revisited this essay in her most recent book, Feminism Without Borders, she challenged Western feminism to deepen its anti-capitalist struggle. But to do so in the U.S., the citadel of anti-communism, means that the movement has to be able to withstand red baiting. And that's the last of these weapons I'd like to talk about tonight. I remember when I went to Faneuil Hall recently, I was walking around the way I did tonight nervously before a talk, and I saw a little plaque, and it said, Frederick Douglass spoke here, gave a very controversial speech. Now, what do you think was so controversial about that speech? He talked about abolishing slavery. Now, slavery is not the dominant social economic system. So now everybody, except maybe, I don't know, John Ashcroft or somebody, is against slavery, at least lip service. But the idea that all of what we have created through our labor historically, socially, should belong to a couple of people, a handful of families like the Bill Gates, to talk about abolishing that, now that's too controversial. You can't even raise the word capitalism in the U.S. without all the air getting sucked out of the room. So, oh, I don't think I like where this is going. It's the end of history, we're told. This is it, this terrible gap between wealth and poverty, where so many of the world's people are living on less than a dollar a day while 200 families own the lion's share. This is the highest form of social and economic organization to which we should aspire. but it's meant to keep us from even asking, is it possible that those of us who do the work of the world every day collectively and are never asked how it should be run could in fact take it over and run it to meet human needs, and not just human needs, but human wants and desires, not just to give people equally, because equal isn't equal, but to provide to people according to their need and to take and enrich society from people's abilities? Well, that's just too controversial. That's just too subversive. Now, there are some to the right of revolutionaries in the movement who would be not that unhappy if communists and other revolutionaries got driven out of the movement because they're political opponents and they think, well, they're kind of a thorn in the side, you know. Maybe if the establishment just got rid of them, then we'd be the leaders. But that's not how it works. Once you sit back, even if you're anti-communist, and let people who are communist or even perceived to be get red-baited, then you become the left. And every time you ask for a quarter, you're going to get, what's the matter with you? Are you a communist? And then you'll get pushed back. The movement will be dismantled. A healthy, vibrant, dynamic movement has a strong left wing. History today is searching for the Sojourner Truths, the Chang Chings and the Madame Bins and the Rosa Luxemburgs, those who saw economic repressive systems that claimed to last forever, and yet they had the vision what was possible and what had to be fought for, even when there weren't mass movements in the streets. Today, there is a new leadership of revolutionary women around the world, from the takeover of the oil facilities by women in Nigeria to the Venezuelan women who are part of the revolution, the indigenous and other women who are organizing as grassroots. We get told, just wait till the next election if you want change, or go court a politician. Have you lobbied lately? That's the way to change things. Work within the system incrementally. And you know, if you don't know, for example, what happened in the 1950s to lift up that moderate demand of the homophile movement, then it could seem in a reactionary period that that's the way forward. Asking politely, give a yard, get an inch. But the fact is, as Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without a struggle. Never has, never will. They tell us wait for a great white man or a great white woman on a big white horse, and they'll come and change everything and save the day. But it's meant to keep us from the real truth that was summed up so succinctly by the late black poet June Jordan. We are the ones we have been waiting for. Thank you.
That was the late Leslie Feinberg, author of Stone Butch Blues, speaking to the Simon Fraser University Women's Studies Department in 2006. The talk and incidental music were recorded by Wendy Pretty. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org and check our daily news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. Special thanks to all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn. Happy birthday, Jen. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.